This is the Frank and Friends Show. Hi there, I'm Frank Murphy.
And I am Mitch Moore.
Mitch Moore, the famous actor that I've talked about on this podcast repeatedly?
Probably.
Well, thank you for finally getting my act together and having you on the show, as promised.
Yeah.
Because we'll explain all of that. We're having, my wife and I are having dinner at this restaurant in Sevierville.
Yep.
An Italian restaurant. It was nice. Yeah. And I saw you there.
Yes.
And you and your wife were having a meal, and we chatted.
Right.
And we got in the conversation of, oh, you should come on the podcast. Yep. Well, I've only done, like, I don't know, a handful of shows and since then. And on one of the days, I filmed two. So I think I've probably done maybe five episodes since that moment. And I thought, but I felt bad because that was 3 months ago.
Right.
So I've been feeling racked with guilt, but I'm glad you're here. Thank you for, we saw each other again.
Right.
At an event, at a concert. My wife had a concert, the Knoxville Choral Society.
We have one of those relationships where we always just run into each other.
Yes.
In public.
We don't even have each other's phone numbers. We just wait until we see each other and then make plans.
We'll finish a story 2 months later. Oh, yeah, when I was telling you 2 months ago when I saw you at the... But I think we had our wires crossed a little bit.
Well, it was me. I had mine crossed because I didn't do enough shows, and I was thinking, I should call Mitch. But also, as you saw from watching... It's easier for me when Sarah Roberto or Frady or anybody says, hey, I'm going to be available these days.
Right.
And that's what you mean by wires crossed.
Right. The ball was in my court to some degree, and I didn't follow up. And I thought, you know, Frank hated me. Plus, you know, so.
Which is, all right, so then we have a lot in common. Because I assume when I don't hear from people that they hate me. So, and they don't, and I don't.
Of course not.
What a relief. Yeah. I'm sweating over here.
Am I your first male co-host?
No.
Okay.
But it's been a while.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember Tim Coleman, who was at Sweet Fanny Adams.
I never saw him on this show, but when I first moved to East Tennessee. This was 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife at the time, let's just leave it at that, had a job. And through that job, I met Tim Coleman. Tim Coleman is one of the first people I met in East Tennessee.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Well, if there were someone who had to be the welcoming ambassador, we had to pick a guy to take all the newcomers and shake their hand and pat them on the back and say, come on in, I think I would nominate Tim Coleman. He would be appropriate for that.
And if you went up to Tim today and said, oh, I did a show with Mitch Moore, he'd go, I have no idea who that is. He won't remember me. But
I don't know, because you're in a lot of local theater productions, and we'll get to that in a second. And so is Tim. But Tim also attends... I see him more now in the audience at shows than in the shows. I mean, granted, he's doing a lot over with Encore Theatrical in Morristown, so I don't always get to Morristown. But I bet you he would remember you, and would know who you are.
He might.
Now, meanwhile, we would love for you to subscribe to this YouTube channel. And I have to explain, I didn't know that people didn't grasp the concept of subscribing on YouTube. But I'm at a nice event, sitting next to this doctor. He's much fancier than me, right? I don't know, I'm lucky to be at the table, I'm just there. You know, local DJ sits at table with fancy people. And I'm trying to explain to the guy that I've got this YouTube channel, and he's interested. He's like, I haven't watched YouTube. And I say, well, it's hard to get a subscription to people to subscribe to your YouTube channel. I say, well, how much does it cost? I'm like, well, doctor, it doesn't cost anything, but you said you have to subscribe. That means you have to pay. I'm like, well, yes, the word subscribe does imply that you're paying something, but in YouTube, they just use it as a means of saying follow,
right?
Like, you know, on Facebook, you'd like it. On Instagram, you would follow it. And on YouTube, you click the subscribe button at no charge, doctor. Free. Free.
Yeah.
So I that was the first I've heard that. Because, I don't know. Some people, they get a zillion subscribers right away. Some of us don't. And it's a struggle. But it's a numbers game, as you know. And getting over a certain number means something in YouTube land. And if you can help me get over that number, I would appreciate it.
You should have told him it's like Netflix. Send you $10 a month. Give him your Venmo. You had that up. He's a doctor, Frank. The guy could afford $10 a month for the Frank and Friends.
And he obviously had paid. We were at a fundraising event. Of course, I get in for free because I had done something. And here he must have paid the $150 a ticket to get in there. What an idiot I am. Should have thought that one through. Should have thought that one through. Well, we also have fantastic merchandise. Now, I'm waiting for my new sweatshirt to arrive. I checked on it. It's being printed. But I love showing up the beach towel.
Oh, yeah. I've
the seen Frank and Friends. It gets real.
That is cool.
I know. You would think it looks like CGI on the show. But here it is right there. No green screen involved. It's an actual beach towel. But the exciting news is you've got the Frank and Friends coffee mug. I am currently using my Marshmallow Peeps coffee mug because, you know, this is a Peeps-centric program. But
you're the only person that has ever used the word Peeps-centric.
I'll put that on my Wikipedia page.
Yes.
But the other day, I got this in the mail, and I didn't even want to open it. I wanted to open it, unbox it on the show because I've never seen packaging material like this for the brand new.
Oh, wow.
Brand new Frank and Friends show coffee mug to replace the one that got broken. And it should be the same. It might be a little newer looking than that one because this one obviously has never been washed. But there we go. Look at that. Yeah.
Okay.
Looks pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Is that one a little... Well, I don't know. They print them one at a time, so they might look a little different. But
so when you said a new mug, I was thinking you meant a new design or a whole...
Oh.
You meant literally just another mug.
Yeah, because I had two.
Okay.
Broke one. Now, I'm sorry that the pint glasses aren't here yet, because I'm probably saving those for when Catherine Frady is here, because we'll do some day drinking and have hard cider in the pint glass. But I guess since I'm not going to... I haven't washed this yet, I'll put it over here with Mo and just let that sit. Mo shouldn't bother you, I don't think.
Okay, yeah.
He's pretty quiet. I had him on one episode, and I got comments from this, especially this viewer named Renee, who loves watching for Mo, and so he's a permanent addition now to the program. When my grandchildren come, I wrap him up in a towel, and I put him up there on top of a cabinet,
sure,
or I hide him somewhere. But I made the mistake of leaving a mug there with old Mo, and in the course of resetting the room for something, the mug fell and broke on the green screen that looks like my fireplace.
This is a real fireplace. I told Frank,
makes me so happy.
I thought it was probably a green screen of a fireplace, but it's an actual fireplace.
Isn't that fantastic? I've got a fireplace that looks so good, it looks fake. That made my day. That absolutely made my day.
That was meant to be a compliment, but it somehow...
I take it as one.
It somehow turned into be something else.
No, I accept the compliment. Look at this. I've got this little place in my house,
yes,
that my wife lets me do a show with my friends, and she'll even... I forgot to ask her, but she'll even put out fresh tablecloths for us, because I should have switched this is the January-February cloth. I probably should have switched out to a March-April.
Okay.
But maybe for the next episode, we'll go to the Easter yellow or the gold or some other beautiful color. All right. But it is that time of the year. It's spring. So how are you, now that we're into daylight saving time?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
One S in saving.
It's not savings time. There's not a sale.
Nope.
On time.
Nope. I don't even think we are saving time, because we lose an hour. I don't see how we're saving anything. But the name of it is Daylight Saving Time.
Yep.
With one S in saving. And I had a friend, I have a friend who was on the radio in Los Angeles for years, and that was his campaign. He had T-shirts, there's one S in saving.
My gosh.
And he's given up. He's retired from it now because he's moving to England, where they have British summertime. So people seem to be able to pronounce that properly. They don't seem to have a trouble with, they don't call it British summer's time. Although if you want to get on my friend Bean's nerves, maybe write to him and say, hey, how's British summer's time? But he made that his campaign. But I also, like you, I didn't need to be convinced. I've been in it from day one.
Yep.
I've been a believer all along. And in fact, it was a business trip with my friend Bean that was my best time change ever. So it was this time of year, it was spring, and we were working in Los Angeles, but we're going to do a weekend broadcast from Lake Havasu City. It was spring break, right? So we drive from LA over to Arizona to Lake Havasu City. Now, Arizona is in mountain time normally, but they don't observe daylight saving time. So on Friday, Friday morning, we finish the show at 10 a.m. at K-Rock, drive to Arizona. We immediately set our clocks forward an hour at whatever time we got to Arizona. So let's say noon, 1, 2 o'clock, whatever time it was. And now we're on Mountain Time for the whole weekend. So Friday night, we're out doing stuff. Saturday, we're working and doing broadcasting. And then Saturday night, Sunday morning, the rest of the world, not Arizona, jumps ahead an hour to daylight saving time. Okay. So now California is on the same time as Arizona. Arizona is in Mountain Time during the winter, and it's in Pacific Time during the summer. So now we go back to California, and everyone else is complaining about the time change, which we had experienced 48 hours earlier.
Right.
And we were fine. So that's part of my moral of the story is maybe we should jump ahead on, I don't know, Friday night instead of Saturday night. Give us a little extra day there, you
right,
know?
Right.
Or
yeah.
Personally, if you can change, if you don't have much to do on a Saturday, it's too late now. I mean, because you have to wait another year for this to happen. But get the jump on it, you know? Do it early. I think they're going to probably at some point leave us stuck on daylight saving time year round.
I wish they would just pick one.
Yeah.
I could get happy with either, but let's just keep it.
But
all
if they
year.
Pick daylight saving time as the permanent,
yeah,
won't the sundials
yeah.
always be wrong?
Oh, but yeah, I mean, who cares? Who cares? Huh?
You don't have a sundial?
Yeah, well,
I was thinking about getting a sundial.
Not anymore.
Maybe they'll be discounted, you know, because they'll always be wrong.
Right.
Or you'll have to redo all the sundials. Can you imagine explaining that to the ancient Phoenicians or whoever came up with sundials? Yeah, in the future, we're going to take your idea for the sundial, but we're going to change the numbers so that they don't make them wrong to you. You know, we have to make new sundials so that where it says 12, it says 1, and so on around the clock. I guess that's what you could do. You just take your sundial. I don't know. Pain in the neck. Well, I was thinking about changing the clocks, and I looked around the house, and there was a clock radio in the upper guest room. So I don't go in there that much, obviously. And I thought, oh, I better change that one if I look at it. And it's already on daylight saving time from last year. We never had set it back.
All right.
So that one was done. And then everything else is automatic. You know, the phone changes itself.
Right.
All the computers change themselves. The Amazon Echoes change themselves. My car changes itself because it plugs into my phone, so it gets the information from the phone, and I don't have to do that. The only two clocks that now in the house that I had to change were the one on the oven and the one on the microwave.
Right.
Now, if you look over there, Mitch, you see where I do my radio work?
Yeah.
Can you imagine the two clocks that I'm looking at all day are the two the two least accurate, right. Most difficult to change.
And you're in a constant just state of panic
right,
all day.
The whole job revolves around time. You know, what time do I have to send the voice track saying? What time do I have to, am I on? What time do I have to do that? So I guess eventually I'll get a fancier oven maybe or a new microwave that will be on the Internet of Things.
A smart microwave.
I mean, I guess. I don't know. I mean, do I really want Jeff Bezos or whomever to know what I'm microwaving?
Oh, he already knows, Frank. He already knows. Frank, Jeff Bezos knows.
He knows it all.
He knows everything.
Well, I mean, I do have lots of those Amazon Echoes around the house, and I know they do listen.
Yeah.
I think on the last episode, or maybe it was two episodes ago, I was explaining how my wife goes to talk to the Alexa machine, and her iPhone answered, no, I heard you call. I'm Siri, not Alexa. Did you mean to talk to me? Like, isn't that creepy? I mean, I never imagined that they were in some kind of, you know.
This is step one of battle. The machines taking over.
This is
what we're living through.
Yeah. Well, my wife is, you know, she's pretty technically savvy, too. So she's got her AirPods. I mentioned a couple episodes ago that we lost one of her AirPods up in Northern Virginia. But we went to the store, and you can buy one AirPod. You just say, which one do you need, the left or the right?
Hmm.
And, you know, so they bring out just a box with just a left AirPod and, you know, do a couple little magic tricks and they're paired and they work fine now. So she'll keep those in, but I can't see them because of her hair. So I will be talking to her sometimes and she'll be listening to music or a podcast or she'll be maybe doing some other thing and I'm unaware. And she'll be she uses them when she's on the phone, but she also works in an office. And she'll call me and she'll say, we're talking about what are we going to send grandson Timmy for his birthday or whatever other thing, some family business. And she'll say, hold on, I have another call. But I'm on the AirPod. She's got me on one AirPod. And then she answers the other phone. You know, hello, job, Jerry speaking. And she'll say, what's that? I can't, Hello, I can't hear you. Speak up. Are you still there? And I'm like, yeah, I'm still here. Not you, her. this conversation going back and forth where she's talking to me.
That's great.
Or not talking to me. All right. So a couple of things we need to get to, and I kind of wanted to get all that time-changey stuff out of the way because otherwise I would forget and I would have to save it for a year. But we talk about how we've crossed paths recently,
right?
Multiple times at my wife's concert and at just a random restaurant. We were taking my brother-in-law and sister-in-law for dinner. But we've crossed paths because of your acting and because of your filmmaking. Now, I used to be in, plays that I had seen at, used to be in shows at Flying Anvil Theater, and that's
right,
closed.
Right.
What are you doing now?
Well, my main gig, you know, you and I were talking about how we're 1099
yeah.
people
oh, yeah.
at tax time. And my main gig for the past 25 years has been as a freelance writer.
Okay. Because I think of you as a musician and an actor. I guess writing fits in with all that.
Writing has been the bread and butter.
Okay.
That's what puts the, yeah. the bread and butter. Is that where that came from? Writing is what puts the food on the table.
What kind of butter do you like? We like the Irish butter.
I like real. What's Irish butter? I've never.
I will make you eat some Irish butter. Would you like
is
some
it
now?
Got a little.
No. It's these Irish cows that it's grass fed. It's bright yellow, but it's delicious.
Okay. Wow. That sounds
it's
great.
It's a better butter, is what I'm telling you. Okay. But all right, I'll move on.
I believe you. All right. I have supplemented my writing career with different things over the years, video production / filmmaking. I'm in a band, you know, it's just more of a fun.
And the band has a clever 80s pun name.
The name of our band is Vinyl Tap.
Come on.
Huh?
Come on.
Is that's good.
Does it go to 11?
That's really
is the big question.
Louder if possible. And I've also over the years done quite a bit of acting on stage,
which is where I mainly know you from because I've seen you in multiple shows.
Right. And now here's the thing. That's how you know me. I know you.
Nobody. What?
I know you. I knew you from before you knew me because when did you come to Knoxville? The 90s?
Early 2000s.
Early 2000s.
2002.
Okay.
So it's 22 years now.
So back in those days, I was still listening to the radio, and I was mm-hmm. actually listening to WIMZ until I got yeah. sick of the 7 songs that they play.
But they're good songs.
I know. It's just it got repetitive.
One of them is very long, so...
But you had come to town. You were co-hosting the morning show with Phil Williams.
Who was well-known for his previous gig at WIMZ and now was on WOKI, which was at the time 100.3 The River.
But I really liked your addition to that show because WIMZ has is sort of a blue collar vibe to it, and you brought some dignity and humor that I thought was a nice compliment. Not that Phil Williams doesn't have dignity, but
but what you're describing is the guy in California, the consultant in California who I knew and had helped. I had been known him for several years. He says to me, hey, I got this client station in Tennessee, and they are going to do an Odd Couple type show.
Oh,
so we're looking for somebody who is the opposite of this local legend who they have. So I'm not local, and I'm not a legend, so I was the opposite.
Yeah.
Phil, the Odd Couple to Phil Williams.
Yeah, if that's what they were trying to do, mm-hmm. they achieved it. So there you go. So that's how I knew Frank, and then we started the whole... kind of knowing who each other were and running into each other. And
we had mutual friends from the acting world. I would meet other actors and people who were in shows with you. And then after the, especially at Flying Anvil, they used to always have receptions after opening nights.
Right, so I remember you coming to see...
shake hands with everybody.
Did you see the Thanksgiving play?
Yes.
And you saw Sylvia.
That's the dog show.
Those were the only two shows I ever did.
Well, I saw both of them, which is why it seems like I've seen you in a... But you've done any other theaters around town?
I have. And this is what I started to say a minute ago. Since the pandemic, I've really put acting on the back burner.
Okay.
I used to have an agent. I was going to Atlanta and Nashville for auditions. And I'm auditioning for like national TV shows, not getting booked on any of them, but auditioning. And but the pandemic really put a damper on that. So, and since then, I've kind of discovered I don't miss... all that grind of an actor. I've really enjoyed stepping away from that. I liked doing, I don't do much stage work anymore.
Okay.
And the reason I did Flying Anvils, because it was a semi-professional, they yeah. paid their actors.
Right, right.
Most theater in this market, as you well know, is community theater. It's all volunteer. And to me, it's not that I don't enjoy it. It's a big time commitment.
Are we talking like Oak Ridge and Theater?
Oak Ridge, Theater Knoxville Downtown, all fine
those
companies.
Those are, you volunteer if you're in the show.
Right, right. You don't get, you do it just for the love of doing it. Mm-hmm. And I like doing it, but at this phase of my life, I just choose to spend my time.
It makes sense to me.
Doing other things. So.
It makes sense to me. I'm amused and interested in those things. And if I don't know, I could probably do it. I've never memorized that many lines because I'm an improviser more right. than a, you know, memorizer. But I've always had that, oh man, that looks like fun. I could get up there with Dave Snow as Hercule Poirot. Yeah, yeah, look at that.
You know. No, that's funny. I did want to talk to you about improv.
Well, let's talk about that. And I want to talk to you about your short-lived, I think, how many YouTube show that I loved.
Yes, it was over a period. We did 10 episodes in about a year.
All right. Well, I want to talk about that, too. But also, before I get to, now that I'm at the mid-roll of the podcast, it's time to talk about Death and Decay and Dr. Bill Bass and BoneZones.com. Don't forget the S. Because if you do, I never tried it. I'm never going to put it in my search history, but you can if you want.
I started to say, what happened? Have you ever gone to Bone Zone? Singular? You
know, that started as a joke. I was emceeing an event for Dr. Bass, and I was just saying it, and it just came out. I improvised the line once, and now I've made it a non, you know, I say it every time on purpose. But because it got a laugh that first time. So I'm like, well, I'll always remember that. Well, anyway, you can get all these great books that are listed on the back of the shirt. You can get the actual shirt. They have a bunch of orange shirts. If you need, if you want to root on the Vols in the NCAA tournament, you can do that. I've got mostly the darker colored stuff.
The hat is cool.
Yeah.
The hat is cool.
Hold that up. And then we've got the actual books that he wrote with John Jefferson, like the fiction series, which are Jefferson Bass, the nonfiction series like Death's Acre. So you can check those out. You can also hire me to come do a presentation about the Body Farm, and I'll play clips of interviews that I have with Dr. Bass and show some of his forensic slides. Like the one, the basic one I do about the history of the Body Farm, we have a case study. I think they used the same guy in a museum exhibit at the McClung Museum one year where you went through the exhibit and you saw it's like 12 slides of him decaying from fresh corpse to
wow.
skull.
Wow.
And it was in the summer, so it happened pretty quick. You know, it doesn't take that long when it's hot
sure.
and humid and the bugs are out. But it's a fascinating thing, and you understand in the course of that presentation why it is so hard to identify a body after a certain point, because they become unrecognizable. So there's a lot of science involved in that, and that's what Dr. Bass, of course, determined all this time since death science at the University of Tennessee. And if it interests you, you want me to come do a presentation, I can do that. Contact BoneZones.com. Or if you just want to read about it yourself on your own time, maybe get Death's Acre and Beyond the Body Farm and then the fiction books. Use that science that Dr. Bass would always be there as the scientific consultant while John Jefferson was writing this thriller of Daring Do, mostly set, except for maybe there's like one book that's in Florida. Most of them are set right here in East Tennessee or Oak Ridge or somewhere around town with really well done. I mean, I enjoy reading those books because you can picture exactly where the characters are driving, you know, because that's how well John writes the books. So I recommend those at BoneZones.com. Don't forget the S. All right. So you did a series of videos with my friend Randy Thompson.
Yes.
Called State of Franklin.
Yes.
Now, as an outsider, as a newcomer, I didn't fully grasp the history of the State of Franklin until years later. But there was an attempt made to create a State of the Union back in, I guess, when Tennessee was being formed from North Carolina.
Right, right.
There was a move and a governor and all of these things to create another state. It would have been the 16th state or 17th state called Franklin.
Yes.
So we would have had, you know, you just would have been like, you had Arkansas, you have Franklin, you have Tennessee.
Right.
And it would have been somewhere over Middle Tennessee-ish?
No, it's actually, it was East Tennessee.
East Tennessee.
I'm not sure if Knoxville would have been part of the State of Franklin or not, but it was definitely in this.
Where John Sevier lived and all that.
Maybe. I think so, right. Possibly, yeah.
He was the governor of it.
Right.
So it's a clever name. All right, so first of all, that gets you thinking, all right, what are we talking about? You're in Tennessee, which almost was the state of Franklin, named after none other than
Benjamin Franklin.
So now, and then the conceit of the show is something that has always fascinated me, this whole idea of what would our founding fathers think of us? And of course, you solved that problem by making it time travel.
Yeah, and so the historical context of the actual state of Franklin has nothing to do
with... It's
just a name.
Yeah.
So my wife and I are both huge Ben Franklin fans.
Well, then you clearly would agree that the greatest musical ever written about the Declaration of Independence is 1776.
I wish I could agree. I've never seen it. So I'm ignorant in that respect.
It's cute, and Ben Franklin is the best part of it, so I thought you might enjoy it.
I probably would, because we're huge fans, and we used to play this, when we still do, play this little game where if we see like an amazing piece of technology, we'll say, what would Ben Franklin think of this? We're always having this discussion about what Ben Franklin...
I can relate to that.
And Ben would love it all, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But so I got the idea for this web series, and what it's... I play the main character. My character's name was Toby Hamilton. I play a guy who's going through a divorce. His life is in turmoil. He's separated. His wife has taken up with another gentleman. We have a school-age daughter. You know, we're sharing custody. My wife is in turmoil. Mm. And then one day I come home in the evening to find that there is an explosion inside my living room. And I go inside and there's a naked man in my living room, baldish, straight shoulder-length hair. He says he's Ben Franklin, of course. And it turns out to actually... be Ben Franklin.
Who was flying a kite and got struck by lightning.
He was flying a kite, got struck by lightning, and boom, he winds up in my living room.
He time travels.
Because I can make up whatever I want, right?
Yes, it was so fun.
And our friend Randy, who just happened to be mostly bald with straight shoulder-length hair, he has since cut his hair.
Oh.
Yeah. He played Ben Franklin, and...
I loved it so much.
And we had so much fun. It's a sci-fi... time travel buddy comedy.
I watched as the episodes came out, I would watch them on the day they came out.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's how much I enjoyed them.
And it would take me about a month to produce a 10-minute episode. I'd spend a week writing.
Yeah.
And then we'd spend a week or a weekend shooting. Wow. And then I'd spend another week editing and get...
Yeah. So it looked like a movie. I mean, or a TV show. It was really well done.
And I'll tell you what, it's still on YouTube. So...
I'll put a link in the description, but go ahead.
Go to a link, and you can subscribe.
For free?
No, it's actually $10. No, I'm kidding. It is, of course, it's free. Subscribe. Frank will put a link, but if you also wanted to just search YouTube, State of Franklin comedy, look for my, you know, funny looking mug, and you should find it.
Yeah.
Every now and then I'll go back and I'll watch an episode and I'll think, man, that was pretty good.
It was very good.
I was proud of it, and I got burned out on it, honestly, because that's a grind.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing even just an episode a month just got to be...
Well, I mean, it would almost be 3 months. The amount of quality that's in it, it looked like it took longer than that. I was surprised, you know, that you'd film for a year and then edit for a year and release them once a month, you know.
Well, I'm glad it looked that good. I mean, it was a skeleton crew. It was the cast. I had some friends who also did some of the shooting.
Because you're like Sam Comer, is he?
Sam did some shooting.
Other people?
Yeah, yes.
What I mean is, because you...
Rob Simpson, that's...
When you're not in it, you can be the cameraman, but when you're in it, someone else has to be
there. And I'm directing, and I'm writing, and editing, and all that. And it just really got to... It just got to be a lot, but we had so much fun. Check it out. And sometimes I still think, well, maybe... Because it's a... With a time travel story, you can do anything. Like, it's been 10 years, but I have moved... my hair is a little grayer.
Yeah.
Randy has cut his hair. The girl who played my daughter, I think, is in college now.
Oh, wow.
But I could probably still...
You could make an episode of Jumping Ahead.
If you're doing time warp stories, you could work with that. So
that's fun. All right. So you were going to ask me, though, about improv, which is something that I am passionate about. In fact, you asked when you said... that you knew me from when I first moved here, my thought was, oh, because he's in acting and arts, he probably saw me do Einstein Simplified, which I joined that troupe 2 months, one month after I moved here.
Okay.
I mean, my first day on the air with Phil was May 1st, 2002, I auditioned for Einstein Simplified on June 1st, 2002.
Wow, okay.
So that's something that's been part of my Knoxville DNA for 20 years.
Sure. And I got to know you that way later.
Okay.
But I, and one thing we haven't talked about, and we can get into this, maybe yeah. this may be a whole nother episode, ooh. But my first career was in stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. I did that really straight out of college and, well, pretty much all of my 20s.
I am a huge fan of comedy, improv, and stand-up.
So I considered myself a competent
yeah.
stand-up comic. I made a living at it. I mean, that mm-hmm. was my full-time job for almost 7 years. But when it comes to improv, I have tried to do improv, Frank, and I just, it's a train wreck. Mm-hmm. They're very different skill sets.
Very. And I've talked about this, actually, not on this show, but I wrote an essay one time trying to explain to broadcasters the difference between stand-up and improv.
Yes.
Because especially the bosses in radio and in broadcasting, they do not understand anything about comedy. They think that your radio morning show, which is 4.5 hours a day, 5 days a week, should be as good and as polished as the late night monologue that they saw, at the time when I was working in L.A., it would be Jay Leno or
sure.
or Jimmy or David Letterman, but now it would be Kimmel or Fallon or whomever.
Right.
They think that your radio morning show should be as polished as that. I'm like, you don't understand that to write a 15-second joke, or you have to have basically start, I use 15 as an easy analogy. You start with this idea, this story that may take 15 minutes. You keep whittling it down and boiling it down and boiling it down until you get this little drop, this crystallized drop.
Right.
It's a reduction. You're making a sauce. And you're constantly reducing and reducing and reducing until you get this delicious, tasty, strong tasting joke with a setup and a premise and a punchline, a premise, a pattern and a punchline. And you have it.
Right.
But that's one. So now you've filled 15 seconds of your set.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to do that over and over again. And these takes so it takes hours of thought and ideas to fill up, up. You get 3 minutes, and maybe you can be a MC. You get 6 minutes, and maybe you can be an opener. You get to like 12, maybe you can, 18,
right.
maybe you can be a middler.
Right.
And then finally, once you get into the 30, 45-minute range, you're a headliner.
Sure.
So you were a headliner?
No, I was a strong middle act.
Uh-huh.
My act was usually about 30 minutes.
So you opened for some, like locally, some of the big names would come through here to go to Side Splitters or the Comedy Zone.
Well, I was based in Nashville at the time.
They have good clubs there.
Yeah, I was actually, the summer after my junior year in college mm-hmm. is when Zany's
yeah.
Comedy Club, which is
still there.
The comedy club, well, not the only, but it's like the major
well,
comedy club.
When you
club.
Watch like Nate Bargatze's YouTube channel, he's been giving exposure to these young guys using Nate Bargatze's name and fame to put the guys on his crew mm-hmm. and they're his opening acts or whomever. But this always seems like it's always at Zany's. Like here's
yeah.
15 minutes of some new guy at Zany's, but Nate Bargatze opens it and closes it and is putting his stamp of approval on
right.
the guy.
Right. I've seen those shows that
yeah.
he does. And so I was in Nashville when Zany's opened, and that fall they started doing open mic night. So I'm in fall term of my senior year in college, and I'm going up and doing open mic nights. And the first two nights I went up was just abysmal. But the third week I went up, I got big, big laughs and, was bitten by
the
stand-up
bug.
Yeah, and then and within 2 years, I transitioned from working as a server in a restaurant to being on the road full-time.
Whoa. So who are some of the guys that you were on the same bill with? Because you end up, if you're on the road, you may end up staying in the comedy condo
yeah.
with them, which is disgusting.
Yeah.
It's as gross as it sounds.
Yeah,
rather than pay hotel rooms for these people, the comedy clubs will own a condominium walking distance from the club, and they'll throw all the comedians in there, and you're on your own,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Imagine having two new roommates every week. I worked with a lot of guys who were, like myself, up and coming back then, but many of which have gone on to huge
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
Here's one for example.
All right.
This is late 80s, early 90s. I think around 1988, I worked, I was still living in Nashville, but I worked, you don't remember the Funny Bone Comedy Club that used to be in Knoxville?
No, but I've heard of
yeah.
several of these. I think they might have had one in some other cities, too.
They did, and right. it was a full-time comedy club.
I was in D.C. at that time, so
yes.
we were going to whatever the club was downtown. you know, on M Street, but go ahead.
But this was on Kingston Pike, yeah. And I was working as a feature act that week, and the headliner was Drew Carey.
Oh, wow.
And Drew Carey was, he was a pretty well-known headliner, but he had not had his TV show yet. He was not a household name.
But he would be on late-night talk shows, and it'd be, that would be his credit. Oh, you've seen him on Johnny Carson.
He had done Carson and Letterman and all of that. But I worked with him in an opening act who I happen to actually still be Facebook friends with. But after three nights, the club owner fired Drew because he was not getting any laughs.
No way.
They let him go, and they brought in, coincidentally, Ron White, who was part of Jeff Foxworthy's blue collar comedy
very
tour.
Southern,
right? And of course Ron White went over greatly in Knoxville, as you can imagine, but Drew just didn't connect with the audiences
to Cleveland.
And I remember we went to see a movie one day, me and Drew and the other guy, and it was just, that's just some of the comedy thing you did, go out to see the movies.
You got time during the day to kill, right?
I felt bad for him. But
Wow. I'm a fan of stand-up. I worked at a radio network that was called the Comedy World Radio Network, and they burned through the money, so all of the investment capital, they burned through it so fast that it went bankrupt. And it was mostly the executives. They did overpay the staff too, which was fine with me. But we had a whole lineup. Imagine of stand-up comedians trying to do, in effect, morning radio shows around the clock. So we had this Big Daddy Jeff Wayne. We had Alan Havey. We had Ken Ober, Bobby Slayton, Sue Murphy. We had some more of these alternative comics like Beth Lapidus. Had a midday shift. So it was all sorts of different types of comedy. And those are just the ones that off the top of my head that I would remember seeing every day when I would go to work. But a lot of them didn't get they had writers. We had a comedian, they'd have a writer and a producer on the show. It was a huge staff. I guess, they said they burned through the money remarkably fast. But the concept they had of trying to write in advance the script that they were going to say on the radio, it was very difficult for them, and I'm a radio guy, so when I got a weekend shift, nobody wanted the Saturday morning shift, and I asked for it, and I got it, but I got it on a trial basis. They said, well, we don't know if you can do it. We'll give you 2 weeks to see if you, or maybe 3 weeks to see if you can do it. After the first one, the guy says to me, forget the audition, you've got the show, it's yours. And he also said, I don't know how you make it seem so easy. Everyone else is struggling with it. Hmm. I said, because they're trying to write the show in advance and anticipate everything. It's not stand-up, it's improv.
Yep.
It's completely the opposite arrangement. And in improv, instead of trying to take this idea and boil it down, reduce, you start with the tiniest of suggestions. You start with the seed.
Yes.
And you grow it. And when the audience laughs and you get the funny, then you're done. Okay, moving on. Next. And the audience is very forgiving because it's their seed, their idea.
Right, right.
So they want to see where it goes, and they want you to grow it and make it funny. That's why in an improv show, I learned, at least here in Knoxville, maybe it's like this everywhere, you get a lot of the same audience over and over again to see different material every time. They never see the same show twice, but you get a lot of a loyal repeat audience. At stand-up, why would you see the same comedian twice? If there were two shows at seven and nine, you would see the exact same jokes that Drew Carey would deliver, the exact same monologue at every show, with a tiny variation here or there, but generally speaking, you've polished the act, right?
Right, right.
And you do the same act. That's why you have to go to city to city, because you got to find a new audience. They're not coming back to you.
Right. And a good working comic that you'll go to see in a club has spent years perfecting trial and error, and error, constantly.
Now, every syllable counts.
Yes, absolutely. Have you done stand-up as we're defining it?
Yes.
Okay.
There was a contest at Side Splitters Comedy Club, and it was called Host with the Most. And the idea was that they would get people who were not comedians to get on stage and attempt comedy to win money for a charity. And they did this in a couple of different ways. Like, there was a version of it where all the open mic comics could compete, and the winner, who was this guy named Nate Kate, would get to go have a... You remember Nate?
No.
He was in a wheelchair. He's hilarious.
Okay.
He was, I haven't talked to him in years. I wish I knew where he was.
I just like the name, Nate Cave. Yeah, what a great name. I love what a great name.
So he went down to Tampa, and he got to get a paid gig at their club in Tampa for a weekend. Well, anyway, this is the same concept, except it was guys from WYMZ and with their sister station, 94, whatever it was. You had a couple of TV people. You had a couple of newspaper guys, men and women. Radio and television and newspaper mainly, who were local celebrities and all competing to be the host with the most.
Okay.
So I didn't enter the first year because I thought, well, I don't do stand-up. And the lady who ran the club, she said, she knew I did improv. She said, you'd be great at this. I'm like, it's the opposite. There's this triangle, and you see you're reducing, and then you're growing. And she didn't care about any of that.
Right.
But I went to the event. In fact, remember Taz Cable? We talked about him before we sat down.
Yes, yes.
I don't know what made me think of him, but something made me think of Taz Cable, and you know who I'm talking about. He was competing that year.
Okay.
So he says, come. And I bought my ticket through him so he would get the credit toward the fundraising competition and maybe win. And Taz, I've written this chapter in my memoir. I don't know, obviously you haven't read it yet because I haven't finished the memoir, but I'll say it here. I wanted to vote for Taz. I really did. But he bombed that night. Mm. He just bombed. And this guy who I didn't know, named Mike Howard, who I'm friends with, but he killed. Mike Howard apparently had done stand-up out in California, but he was definitely a radio guy. He had a talk show and does local acting. He works at Dollywood now as a stage manager. I mean, he ran Encore Theatrical for a little while. You would know who I'm talking about if you saw him, probably.
Okay.
And I voted for Mike Howard because he was the best one. So I think he won, and Taz did not. But I never told Taz until now that I didn't vote for him. But I love you, Taz. You've taught me a lot over the years, and one of the things was what not to do. So I didn't want to do it. Well, anyway, comes around a year. And Bridget, the lady at this comedy club, is asking me to do it again. And I had, having seen how it went, it's in the back of my mind that I probably could. Probably could. Yeah, I'm not, maybe I'd have to work at it. I can't just go and just do it. I mean, I could try. I mean, I could wing it. I could do my impersonation of someone doing stand-up. But why don't I, anyway, I signed up. Went through this whole rigmarole, and I signed up. Rather than just show up that night, I went to open mic night and was terrible. So
yeah, that's fine.
I went back to the next open mic night, and I was terrible again. And somebody came up to me, one of the other comedians came up to me and says, you know, there's this book about how to do stand-up. It's written by this lady named Judy Carter, and it's a workshop. It's a book. I mean, some people like it, some people don't, but it's at least give you some basics of how to do stand-up comedy. And that's where I learned, you know, oh, okay, you've got to do something called an act out. You've got to do something, basic premise pattern, break the pattern, bum, bum, bum. You know, there's sort of these things, and kind of reduce and boil down, and don't get out of your own head with talking about these stories that are interesting just to you, and make it more accessible to everybody else. So I started getting better at it, and I've been going now to open mic nights for probably 3 months leading up to the contest.
Okay.
Now, I noticed none of the other contestants were doing that. It was just me and all the regular open mic guys.
Sure.
But I practiced. And the other conceit to win the contest was to sell the most tickets. You know, you get a prize for your charity, gets a prize if you sell the most tickets. And if you get the most votes the night of, you get 90% of the door. And the other 10% is doled out to everybody else.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So I decided I'm going to take it all. I'm taking, maybe it was 80%. Somehow I got 90% because I got the 10% for selling the most tickets and whatever the rest of it was for getting the most votes. So I go to my church, which is nearby on Cedar Bluff Road, and I'm telling everybody, I'm going to be raising money for Catholic Charities. You want to raise money for Catholic Charities? There's $10. Come on out. We're having a fundraiser for Catholic Charities. And the priest is there sitting with my wife at the main, we bought our own tickets, and I know the club. We were doing improv at the club at the time. I knew exactly what table to get. I wanted to get one where she could record me, so I got the best, you know, right there. But also, it meant that all the comedians are looking at the priest.
Okay.
In the audience. It destroyed them.
Oh, I can imagine.
It messed with their heads.
It got in their heads.
Because a lot of those guys had filthy acts. Because when you start out in comedy, and my act had curse words in it at the beginning, I didn't know I ended up taking them all out and making it a clean act, which is harder because yes. you can get on there and say filthy words and you'll get a reaction from the audience. You could shock them into laughing. That's right. A lot of comedians. Gilbert Gottfried would used to do that. He'd come out and do his filthiest stuff right at the beginning, kind of shock you into submission, and then he would do his regular material, which was hilarious. That's a technique. Well, I decided I was going to go clean on this because, I mean, obviously I'm playing for Catholic Charities and the priest is going to be there. But these other guys, they were all off their game.
Uh-huh.
And then I come out there and I start doing jokes about my beloved Irish Catholic parents who drank too much. And everyone in the audience is like, oh, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
So, of course I won.
You were prepared. You rigged the game. You were prepared.
That's
great. I have to tell you though, I have always been in awe and just very humbled by anybody who is good at improv, because I've seen Einstein Simplified and Full Disclosure when they were doing a lot of stuff, and Full Disclosure was hosting workshops, monthly workshops.
They did the other style of improv. I didn't get into that.
They did long form.
And we do short form, which you could say it's long form in a short period, but it's more gamey and jokey, like on Whose Line.
Right.
You see, Whose Line Is It Anyway? That's short form.
Right.
And long form, that's like they're trying to create a story arc with a beginning, right. middle, and an end.
Yeah. And I'd go to those workshops, mm-hmm. and I think my problem, maybe I was in too much in my own head. I was trying to think it too much instead of just going with the situation. I was trying to like kind of pre-write things, you know, because that's what stand-up comics do. Sure. They pre-write. And
You're a generator. See, and I'm a reactor.
Okay.
And if you can, that's one thing. I mean, it's like, I guess it's a personality type. But in a talk show scenario, in a morning DJ show, they had workshops. We have to figure out who's on the show is the generator and who's the reactor.
Huh.
And they always said it's easier to be the reactor. And I'm like, okay, well, then I'll take the easy one. But it's hard to be a good generator. It sounds like that's what you were doing, though. You were trying to generate where it's going, whereas a reactor like me can walk into an improv scene and just with nothing, and you just see something, and then you react to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd never heard those terms. That's interesting. I would love to learn. I would love to be in an improv learning environment, because it's something I still want to challenge myself to be not sucky at.
Well, I loved it. I mean, to me, it's spiritual in the regard that when you're doing improv, the most important person on the stage is the other person.
Right.
So it's the golden rule, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, or something. In this case, support your neighbor more, mm-hmm. and they should do the same for you. It is all the act of listening.
Yes, and
mm-hmm.
yes,
the accepting and advancing. So it's skills that help you in life beyond the stage, but if you can do it on stage and just, it's very freeing. The other thing I like about it is, you know, I don't know if you have one of those voices inside your head, it sounds like you do, that's constantly trying to tell you what to do and tell you everything. It's all these, when I'm doing improv, those voices are silenced because mm-hmm. It's one of those activities that I'm 100% involved in the moment. All I can do is be in the pretend scene. Everything in the improv is fake, of course. It's just imaginary. I'm not really holding a pineapple, but you can think that I am. All of that is pretend, and I'm so engrossed in that made-up world for 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes that every other worry I have in the world goes away.
Yeah, that's got to be quite a rush.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have always considered myself a fairly quick-witted person. I can sit here and, you know, riff with you and blah, blah, blah.
I agree.
But if somebody says, okay, Mitch, you're a pig and it's St. Patrick's Day, go. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with that. What? What do I do? So I don't know.
When Porky's eyes are smiling.
See, there you go. There you go. That's it. That's it. You're doing
it. So there's another technique that I tried to teach some radio DJs. They said, look, if you have to make comedy on the spot, and you've got two things that seem unassociated, make a list of qualities of the two things, right? Things that you associate with Irish, right? Things that you associate with pigs. Mm-hmm. And Porky Pig comes up. And Irish eyes are smiling come up. And those aren't a perfect match, but they were near the top of the list in my head, so I just went with it.
Right, right. That's how it works.
In radio, you've got more time. You can actually plot out. And it's always, you know, oh, they're going to open a new theme park based on whatever. It seems like that was a standard trope in the 80s and 90s. So you write down all the theme park things, all the rides at Disneyland and other theme parks, and then you write down the other weird characters that, oh, if there's going to be a theme park based on other character, not Mickey Mouse. And then all you just start filling, matching, and, you know, connecting the dots, and you've got this, you know, radio bit in fairly short order.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, I'm glad you're... Thank you. I appreciate all the compliments, and I return them to you because I'm a fan of your writing, and obviously with State of Franklin, and your acting that I've seen. I haven't seen you do that in a while, but I'm glad... I didn't know that you did so much writing. That's good to know that you have an actual income.
Yeah. Yeah, for now.
And I'm also glad that I got off my sorry butt and got you over here.
Yeah, me too. I've been looking forward to this all week. I've been really psyched
good.
For it.
So, all right. Yeah. Excellent. Well, if you enjoy Audible entertainment, as in Audible specifically, go to audibletrial.com/frankandfriendshow where they've got a gazillion, I think they said 300 years worth of audiobooks. So you can't physically listen to them all, but you can start somewhere and listen to the ones that you really want to hear. And in fact, if you go to that URL, you get a free premium membership for 1 month where you get an MP3 download. You can also listen to as much streaming as you can during that month and make a decision at the end. And stick with it, as you probably will. Continue to get an MP3 credit every month thereafter. And those are the ones you download and keep on your own device so that if you're somewhere without a connection, you're in a plane, you're in a mountains, whatever, you can listen to what you've downloaded. But it's not just audiobooks. It's podcasts like ours at audibletrial.com/frankandfriendshow. We also urge you to check out the merch. Like the mug, the new mug. Next week, I hope to have the pint glasses, maybe a new hoodie to show you. Here's the old hoodie, which my friend Becca bought one. We had a merch sale. So she bought this in blue, and I forgot to ask her if she got the royal blue, which is, I think, very pretty. And the other one, there's another one that my wife has. I'll have to show it to you, but it's got the old logo on it, but it's super soft. So I ordered her one of those for her birthday. In fact, I might be showing this episode on her birthday. Happy birthday, Jerry. Just occurred to me, calendar, if I put this out on Friday, happy birthday, Jerry. Yeah. I was thinking of you. And you get the merch at frankandfriendsshow.com/store. You can subscribe for free on YouTube. It does not cost. Please do check that out. And you can also listen on all the audio podcast devices. Mitch, I'll put the link for State of Franklin in the credits. Anything
Thank
else
you.
You want to plug or just want to come back sometime?
Let's just, I would just like to come back sometime and we'll...
Tell more stories. Good.
I'll be like one of those old showbiz guys with a scar. Yeah. But when me and Frank came out of the Copa, we ran into Sammy and Dean.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to be that guy. But
actually, if you look up Frank and Friends on YouTube and you don't put Frank and Friends Show, the first hits are all Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay, yeah.
So it's been good company to be in.
Of course, yeah.
All right, well, this is the Frank and Friends Show. Thanks for watching. My name is Frank Murphy.
I'm Mitch Moore.
And we'll talk to you again next time.